One of the main features of Parshat Mishpatim is that it characterizes the different laws that are found both in interpersonal relationships between people, property, and way it interacts with people, and assorted different what are Mishpatim, are laws. And part of the rubric of the Mishpatim is the whole concept as well as certain laws which are specific to the Shoftim, to the judges, how they have to judge in an appropriate manner, that it will be a Mishpat Emet, there will be a judgment of truth. We find at the beginning of Perek Kaf Gimel, the Torah tells us, do not accept a false report. And that's one example, as we will soon see, of an azhara, of a warning to the judges to be able to judge properly. And the Torah goes on in Perek Kaf Gimel by saying, do not pervert the judgment of your destitute person in his grievance. Distance yourself from a false word. Do not execute the innocent or the righteous, for I shall not exonerate the wicked. And here we have, do not accept a bribe, etc. We have here very specific ideas that are directed toward the Shoftim. And as the Marosh Shirim Rav Reitz points out in source number 2, when we look at all of these laws and all these azharos, all of these warnings, we may have an initial gut reaction that says, this is distant from my life, I'll never be a judge, I'm not in the position of a legal Jewish court scene where I have to know these laws. What is its application? What is its relevancy to my life? So I'd like to, Amir Tzashem, today take two examples where things which seem to be so distant from us and so unrelated to our lives are very much a calling for us and for who we are. And then I'd like to examine and analyze the fundamental, almost, theme that runs across both of these laws, which we'll see is the inyan of emes, of truth, and sheker, and falsehood, and then discuss together, hopefully on a more practical, esoteric, and then practical level, the whole idea of midvar sheker tircha, to distance ourselves from falsehood. Let's take a look at this first verse of do not accept a false report. On here, Rashi brings down the Gemara, which tells us, Zu, source 3, Azhara l'dayan, shelo yishma divrei baldin ad shiavo baldin chavero. Rashi teaches us that when a person comes, a litigant comes to present their case, the judges are not allowed to hear the case until the other party is there and is ready to present their side immediately afterwards. And Rav Reitz notes that in reality, we find clearly among the Sfarim that it would be best to have both parties here simultaneously. Because what happens, as soon as you hear one side of the story, to a certain extent, that side becomes a reality. And if the other side doesn't present for hours later, so that one side sticks in your head, and it's very hard then to retract and listen openly to the other side. So in the perfect world, if we could hear, you know, sometimes we think mothers can do that, you know, more than one person speaking at a time. So we would hear more than one Baal Din, but that's not reality. So we have to hear one after the other in as a successive amount of time as possible. And here, the Meiri in on Mishlei, in the end of source 4 notes, it's Arala Dayan Chelo Yashko Machshavotov Amar Shisaper Lo Rishon. What we're really learning here is that the judges cannot spend a tremendous amount of effort focusing and thinking and really pondering what the first one said. Because the natural process, the Maharal echoes this, is that when the dayanim, when the courts hear the first person, they're immediately going to try to judge him favorably. They're going to see his point of view, even if he's correct. And they're not going to be open to hearing the other side. Now, what is the relevancy for our lives? I think the answer is very clear. Rav Reitz speaks about that this is really a description of what happens to us. if we recognize this pitfall, that we are so easily impressed by first impression, and we have such a difficult time to uproot that which we've heard and that which we've taken in as what we would call the first truth, it's very hard then to rethink in our minds. And this happens so often in our lives. You know, we learn a certain, let's say, halacha as a child, a certain, or we practice a certain way. And how many times do our kids go to yeshivas and then they come back and they see us in the kitchen on Shabbos and say, Ma, you're not doing it right. So do we have the knee-jerk reaction, I've been doing this for the last 45 years till right before you were born and when you were in diapers and leave me alone? And we're so caught in that truth that we believe was, it is the original truth? Or are we open to saying, well, I never knew that. Let me see it. Let me learn from you. Let me ask. Let me discuss. And let me see what indeed is correct. This is a very hard thing for people to do, to be able to retract. Perhaps the personality that describes so powerfully the difficulty in being able to step out of our initial beliefs and be able to be open to a new reality or a different reality, it's a story in source 7 of Chiel from Beit El. We know that Chiel was the individual who built up the city of Jericho, of Jericho, even though there was a chayrem, there was a ban that Joshua placed on the city, that anyone who would build up the city with his first son, when he would establish the foundations of the city, his first son would die, and all his children would die successively until when he would set up the doorway, his youngest son would die. And indeed, that's exactly what happened to Chiel. Now you would think, if a person is watching their children dying one after the other, wouldn't you stop building in the middle of the way? What was Chiel thinking? He sees the curse in front of his eyes. So says Rav Reis, Binayin Sha'av Chiel, the arrow in 7, Akshut Ko Nora'a, where did this stubbornness come from? Heinu Shira'a B'moinav Ketzad Divrei, Davar Medivrei Anavi Lo Nafal Arza, when he clearly sees the words of the prophet are coming true. Ve'ech Yechol Ayal Lamshich Likachesh Aleyem B'mechir Ko Kavei, how could he pay such a tremendous price? Al Korcha Nimseinu L'medim, we therefore see She'efshar she'agia adam l'matzav shehu muchan l'shalem kol mechir. We see people are ready to pray any price. U'bilvad, as long as shelo yitzarech l'odot b'ta'utom, that he doesn't have to admit he made a mistake. And this is our challenge. We know in source number 6 that one of the virtues of a chacham is to be molde ala emes, to be able to admit the truth, to be able to say, I made a mistake. I was under a certain impression, I was under a certain assumption, but now I'm ready to change. And the positive example on the next page in source 8 is the individual, Shimon Hasmoni, who Amsoni, who darshened out, who learned out all the words et in the Torah that were ba'al l'rabot, that came to add something. Until he came to et Hashem Elokecha tira, that you should fear Hashem. And he says, there's nothing you can add to that. And he stopped. And they said to him, well, what's going to happen to all the ets until now? And he says that famous statement, Kishem shekibalti schar ala drisha, kakibalti schar ala prisha. Just like I got reward for all my darshaning, I'm going to get reward for stepping back. I see I must have made a mistake. I see, right, Rabbi Akiva comes along later and says that, Rabbo Tamidei Chachamim, but he's able to step back and say, I was wrong. And I'm able to admit that I'm wrong, and I'm not going to be so stuck to create something which I don't think is truth, just in order to satisfy this, you know, research and intellectual project that I've been working on for years to make sure that, you know, so one place doesn't work so well, so I'll just fudge it. No. The mita, and this is what we say in the morning by the Karbanos, Lo Olam Yehei Adam Yirei Shamayim. A person has to have Yira Shamayim, fear of heaven. And one of the components of fear of heaven is Umolde Al Ha'emes, to be able to say the truth and to be able to retract and say, I was under a certain assumption, I was wrong, And that's the quality of a chacham, and that's the first thing that we learn about the shoftim, about the judges, how important first impressions are, how difficult it is to uproot them. And we have to recognize that we have that within us, that challenge, and how careful we have to be amistic, truthful at all costs. The second example is one that the Uriyahel, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman, the Chevron Rosh Yeshiva, learns in Source 9, An Midvar Sheker Tirchak. And he says, our rabbis learn from this pasuk something very fascinating. We learn from here, this is the second paragraph, the Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Minayin l'shnayim shebau l'din. Let's take a case of two people who come in front of the court. One is wearing smartutim, one is wearing rags, you know, very simple or, you know, not appropriately dressed clothes. And the other one is lovesh istalyut bat mea mana. And the other one's wearing very fancy garments. So the Gemara teaches us that we say to these people, either both of you have to wear rags or both of you have to wear beautiful clothing. You are not allowed to judge, but what both of them are sitting in front of you or standing in front of you in this inequality. Why? And the answer is very simple. The answer is, v'shelo yisa panim bedin. Because when two people are in front of you, you have to recognize, ki hincha mitkarev, the asterisk in 9, la sheker, birotcha hashnayim b'malshima elu. We are influenced by lies. V'yesh chashash shetisa panim lo'oto halavush, istalyut v'tizkeh oto shelo kadim. Whether we recognize it or not, whether it's subconscious or not, we are affected by those who are dressed very nicely, who are dressed very, you know, very expensive clothing. And subconsciously we may say, ah, he must be zocha badin, he must be innocent, and this guy must be guilty. Midvar sheker tirchak, you want to know the extent of sheker? The extent of sheker is what happens to our eyes, whether we're conscious of it or not. And it's interesting, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman continues in source number 10 and said, well, give me a break. If both of them are both wearing simple clothes or both expensive clothes, does not the judge know that this is just a charade, that it's something that's going to be put on for a couple of hours and then taken off? Underneath that is totally different clothes. That may be true. But the Torah is teaching us the depth of human understanding. And that is, what we see in front of our eyes has a tremendous impact, more so than the intellect, more so than we know intellectually that they're different, but what we see in front of us has such an impact that right now, when you see these two in front of you, this is a decision that is going to somehow weigh on you. And therefore, they have to be dressed in the same types of clothing. Again, you may say, well, this is so distant from us, we don't judge. So again, the Uriyahel notes there are two implications. There are many, but two he notes for our lives. The first and most simple level is source number 11. He says, you know, somebody comes into shul. Who do we greet? Do we greet with the great Shalom Aleichem, the ones who are dressed very nicely and, you know, they look like, you know, elegant people? Or is our attention focused on someone who comes in very simply dressed? We ourselves know, whether it's in shul, whether it's at a party, what affects us? Who do we, you know, try to talk to and try to be friendly with? Okay, you're going to say to me, it's not right and it's not moral. Okay, I'm impressed. I'm glad we feel that way. But there's a reality. And if you don't believe me, do a sociological study. Not me. We know it's a davar yadua about human nature, is we're very affected by the outer clothing, the outer trapping. And as the Uriyahu points out in source number 11, what we're really doing is giving kavod to some gold buttons and not kavod to a person. Because if we really understood kavod abrios, we really understood the honor of every single human being, it would be irrelevant of what they were wearing on the outside, and we would treat every single person in the same way. This is Midvar Sheker Tirchak. We are affected by this falsehood, this lies, that there's a certain echelon in society that we try to be super nice to. you know, reminds me, even though it's different, but what comes to mind is that maaseh of a certain shul in England that was very makpid, very careful, that the only person who would get aliyahs were people who wore top hats. That was the minhag in the shul. There was a certain fellow who refused to put on a top hat for whatever reason. And years went by where he had yortzites and he had family simchas and birth of children, whatever it was, and he never got an aliyah. And it was like, you know, it was like davar yadua, everyone knew that this guy never got an aliyah because he refused to put on a top hat. After many years, one Shabbos, he walks in with a top hat and the whole place is abuzz. Wow, after all these years, he finally has a top hat. Sure enough, what the first aliyah could get, let's say Shlishi, was it a Kohen or Levi, whatever it was, he gets called up to the Torah. And what does he do? He takes off his top hat, he puts it down by the Sefer Torah, he turns to the top hat and says, "Nu, say the bracha. You're the one who got the aliyah." And that's the reality. The reality is, are we so super impressed by the externals that we forget about the internals? Midvar sheker tirchak. That's the warning to stay away from falsehood. On a little bit of a deeper level, the Yahel discusses in Source 12 that we could also understand this halacha in a more metaphysical sense about each and every one of us. That when we have thoughts that come into our heads, the, you know, we call it the positive thought and the negative thought, or it's called the Yetzer Hara thought and the Yetzer Tov thought. So the Yetzer Hara usually dresses up in the fancy clothes, and it gives us, you know, what it thinks. At least it's an illusory feeling of many, many good benefits. You got to speak the Lashon Hara. You're going to feel so good when you speak the Lashon Hara. And, you know, it dresses itself up. And the poor, you know, positive energy within us, it's like, oh, yeah, it's an Aveira, oh, but, you know, it doesn't have the same glamour. And he says, when we're making a decision about the positive energy and the negative energy within us, we have to recognize that we have to dress them up the same. And that's what the Gemara in Brachos speaks about, that you have to first, you know, bring Torah into the picture and see the sweetness of Torah and try to make that that positive sign look nicer. And if that doesn't work, then say Kriyat Shema, Kabbalat Olmot Shamayim. Think of death. Think that the other side is an illusory side. Whatever you have to do, you have to dress them up evenly. Because if you just have the negative side that looks so pretty and the positive side that looks so, you know, Nebuch, you're going to have a problem. And that is the reality that we have within our lives. Now, both of these, the two dayanim, as well as that being able to speak simultaneously or one after the other without a prolonged period of time, as well as that both of them are dressed appropriately, as we mentioned, are both predicated on the concept of MS, on the concept of truth. And my friends, I think this leads us to a discussion that I'd like to spend the bulk of today on what is the aspect of truth in this world. What is the place of falsehood, and how do we work with this interaction between the two? I'd like to begin on more of a philosophical level and then bring it down into the world of the practical. There's a very beautiful essay in Parshat Noach from the Maarche Lev, from Moshe Schwab from Gateshead, where he notes in Source 14 the following. Echad me yesodot bashkavatenu al haolam, Kedar leda echli nahegimo, huzeh asher Kadosh Baruch Hu barat olam yesh ma'ayim. One of the fundamental ideas that we know is that Hashem created the world yesh ma'ayim, something from nothing. Hakavana b'ma'ayim hu ein od milvato. There's a lot of Torah on what does it mean ma'ayim, from nothing, but on one level ma'ayim means that Hashem is something ma'ayim, from ein od milvato. That is it. Hashem created the world from a reality of there is no other world or no other being aside from Hashem, which means when we're speaking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu and his interrelationship with this world, we have to understand the famous idea that in reality there is no place devoid of God. So therefore, for God to create the world, he had to be mitzamtzem. He had to do simsum. He had to contract himself to make room for the world, to make room for a place, so to speak, devoid of God, a place called the world. But in the real sense, he notes, the world is just a shadow of Hashem. It's a tzel. Hashem tzilcha. Hashem is our shadow, which means that the world looks like a dark place. It looks like a shadow. It looks like a place devoid of godliness. But in reality, our job is to be able to find the godliness within this world. Our job is to find the or in the choshech, the light in the darkness, to be able to reveal godliness at every step of the way. And this is what the focus of this world is, to see bebehirus with clarity at Or Hashem, the end of 14, the light of Hashem, where we recognize et ha'ein od mavada, that Hashem is just concealing himself, as we spoke about in the Az Yashir Shir, and that no part of the world exists outside of Hashem. Now, if we understand that this is our job, so then our job in this world is to take all the gashmias in 16, all the physicality, and be able to raise it to a level of ruchnias, to be able to raise it to a level of spirituality, to recognize that everything that exists in this world is really a medium to serve Hashem, because there's nothing aside from Hashem. Like he notes in Source 15 to say, I serve Hashem. There's something fundamentally wrong in that statement, because there's an I aside from Hashem. In reality, our job, and it's obviously very high level, and this is the ultimate revelation of Yemos HaMashiach, of the future times, is to recognize that every part of our lives is just a manifestation of God's will. And that is why in Source 18, when we look at the mitos, the different character and aspects in this world, we need to see them as means of serving God, as means of a higher level. So when we talk about love in this world, make sure we love the appropriate things. Love our fellow man, love our Kadosh Baruch Hu. We talk about kavod, honor. It's not about honor that we seek out. It's about honoring Hashem. It's about honoring others. It's about giving kavod to others, giving kavod to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, giving kavod to our parents. We are able to have the correct perspective. Now, having said this, he notes that of all the mitos, of all the character traits, each and every one can be channeled for the service of Hashem, to be able to find the truth in this world, the deeper meaning in this world of finding the Ein Od Milvato, the Ayin, that there's nothing else aside from Hashem, except for one mita, and that mita, that quality is Sheker. Sheker, falsehood, has no place in this world. And this is really our challenge in the world we live in. Source 19, let's learn together. Mi sheba litalo vilalot al mitzilot mitzila ruchani. Those who are coming to ascend the spiritual levels. Hare trilat darko hi riyat hasheker. We have to be able to have with clarity a vision of what is truth in this world and what is falsehood. Kikol ocha damistavev apnei holam. As long as we live in this world, umedameh, and we think, asher olam hu bechol zot olam, that the world is nonetheless a world. I mean, there is something aside from Hashem. After all, we enjoy physical things in this world, and we have a good time in this world. Vasher havle olam hazeh hinam inyanim sheru'i limaser lahem. And yes, it's worth putting in 100-hour days, you know, weeks to, you know, have the pleasures of this world. He's living a world of falsehood and surrounding himself with falsehood. Now, let's understand, obviously, we're put in this world, we need to make money, to make a parnasa, to be able to support ourselves, our family. But the question we have to ask ourselves is, when I go out to work, do I understand that this is a chesed of supporting those around me, supporting stock institutions, whatever it may be? Or do I look at this as an end in its own right? Do I look at this that this is what my whole life should be? You know, when you hear stories of, young children who say to their mothers, you know, that man who comes to our house every Friday night and asks me those parsha questions, he's really tough on me. Tell him to stop it. When he's talking about his own father. But the child, this young child, goes to sleep before his father comes home. And he never sees his father. He never interacts with his father. And he sees this man on Friday night as a strange man. Okay, that's an extreme example. But examples like this are just a demonstration where people have their priorities messed up. And this is the challenge that we have to understand. Do we understand what the world is about? And it gives us an example in Source 19. He says, you know, imagine kids playing with Monopoly money, and one kid takes money from another kid. So the kid from whom money was taken runs to a parent and says, he took my money. So the parent says, come on, it's just play money. It's not real $20. It's the play $20. It's a play $100. Don't make a big deal about it. So ask Rav Schwab, now look at us. When we complain about money, and money is it's important for us. Let's not understand that. But do we place undue priority and undue emphasis on money very much? Like this $20 bill of Monopoly money, where for this child, that's the whole world. Do we have our priorities in check or not? Because after all, as he points out, and this is on the next page in source number 23, we're dealing with this world, which is at most 120 years, and for most people, in the Gvuros Shmonim Shana, 80, 90 years. And we look at the world of Nitzchias, the world of the eternal world, is forever. An example we've given before, the example that he gives here, is filling up a stadium with bird seeds and having one bird every 1,000 years take out one seed. The amount of time that it would take, millions of years, to empty out the stadium is a sense of what Nitzchias is about, but it's not Nitzchias. Nitzchias, something that is eternal, is far, far greater than that. My friends, you want to know what the world is really about in essence? It's about being able to see the truth and being able to see what is correct and being able not to fall into the trap of falsehood, of lies, of seeing this world as an end of itself, as a being outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but being able to recognize that this world is a medium of a much greater reality, the reality of Ein Od Milvado. Let's bring this down to a little bit more of the practical. Source number 20. Rabbi Franton, listen to your messages, points out. The Sma writes that when Hashem finally brings the Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael, the nations of the world will say, Hashem is right to choose the Jews as his people because they are a truthful people. But if the Jews will lie and cheat, the nations of the world will say, what is this thing that Hashem has done? Why has he chosen to associate himself with thieves and liars? Apparently, in the view of the Sma, the Geula, the redemption, will be delayed until the nations of the world will gladly attest to the honesty and integrity of the Jewish people. We have to be honest with ourselves, 21. It is dishonest to pay lip service to the truth and then employ all sorts of clever subterfuges to avoid it. And this is a real challenge, and we're living it today, my friends, that one of the things that the nations of the world point to the Jews about is that the Jews are held to a standard of truth and honesty that is really above all the other nations. Because this is the hallmark of what life is about, living a life of truth. You know, somebody recently sent me an article, and I don't recall from where, about a list of different government, very influential government officials and other people who did things that were dishonest. And when the press would speak about, you know, what they've done wrong, they never mentioned they were Catholic, they were Lutheran. Religion never played a part. And likewise, when Jewish people would do tremendous acts of kindness, of saving the world, very often, you know, people who were, you know, only almost like Jewish by birth, but it wouldn't mention, you know, even though they had nothing connected to Judaism, were never mentioned, and they were Jewish. But we have seen, my friends, and in recent history of the last couple of months has clearly borne this out, that any time a Jewish businessman does something dishonest and swindles and there's bankruptcy and terrible things, almost every single article will mention the fact that he's Jewish. That's the reality of the world we live in. There's a certain standard, and it's a standard that is demanded of us that we need to meet up to. And the Geula, says the Sma, is dependent on our ability to be honest. So then says Rabbi Fran, but what are you supposed to do if everyone around you is bending the rules? What should you do if your competitors are milking the system for all it's worth? Should you still deal fairly and honestly and allow them to gain the advantage over you? The answer is yes, absolutely less. Believe me, in the long run, you will not lose out. And he quotes the following medrash. It's a Gevaldic medrash. The medrash relates that falsehood came to Noah's ark. This is the end of 21 by the asterisk. Noah, I want to come along with you, said falsehood. I want to be in the new world. You can't come, said Noah, because you need a partner. Only pairs are allowed into the ark, but you're not part of a pair. Get yourself a partner, and then we'll talk. So falsehood set in search of a partner, but who would be foolish enough to become partners with falsehood? Finally, falsehood managed to find a partner. It was destruction. I'll make you a deal, falsehood said to destruction. Let's go out and see what we can earn. Then we'll divide it equally between us. And so this rather sordid pair, falsehood and destruction, made its way to the ark and were saved from the flood. A few thousand years later, falsehood said to destruction, let's make an accounting of everything we've earned. Where's all the profit we've made over the last few thousand years? It must be an astronomical number by now. Profit, said destruction. Have you forgotten who your partner is? Don't you know my name? I'm destruction. Anything I touch is destroyed. There is no profit, my friend. No profit at all. It may look like your competitors are gaining an unfair advantage, but wherever falsehood goes, destruction cannot be far behind. That's the reality. And we need to recognize, in 24 it continues, that our contemporary society is concerned with image rather than substance. All too many people project one image in the neighborhood and the shtibul, but take on an entirely different persona when they go downtown. Vulgar language, inappropriate humor, all of these things are in their briefcases, ready to be unpacked when they get to the office. And he quotes here in the asterisk in 24 an idea that I thought was absolutely incredible, based on Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. He once commented that some Jews have become reverse Maranos. The Maranos were Gentiles on the outside, but Jews on the inside. Some of us have become Jews on the outside, but Gentiles on the inside. The image is there, but with no substance behind it. Where is truth? And this is the question we have to ask ourselves in the details of our lives and in the overall picture of our lives. Are we living a life of truth? Are we living a life where our priorities are headed in the correct direction? And that's how he explains in Source 26, the Gemara in the Nedarim, which speaks about that there'll be no Gehenna in the next world. Rather, Kadosh Baruch Hu will unveil the sun. Based on Pasuk at the end of Malachim, the righteous will be healed by it, and the sinful will be punished by it. And it quotes an idea from Rav Lev, who says that the metaphor of the sun is the light of truth. In the future, Hashem will shed the light of truth upon the world. There will be no more subterfuges, no more excuses, no more dissimulation, only the unadorned truth. There will be no place to hide. And we all have to face the truth. The righteous will be vindicated by the truth, but the sinful will be condemned by it. At that time, we will all look back over the long span of our lifetimes, and we will understand what our lives really meant. And if we discover, heaven forbid, that for all those years we were living a lie, it will be incredibly painful, more painful than any external rebuke could possibly be. My friends, can you imagine looking back at ourselves, at the way we deal with others, our family members, the way we interact with people, the way we do business, the way we deal with our community affairs? Is there honesty for honesty's sake? Do we understand what is truth that I refuse to unbend to it? Or are we people so affected by the world around us? So I tell a little lie here. So I bend the rules here. And we're very good at covering it up and rationalizing it. But ultimately, one lie builds on the other. And we look back and ask ourselves, where did we veer off? So what's the answer? How do we live a life of truth? How do we live a life which is going to be a life that's going to unveil the Ein Od Milvado, the reality of why we are here, and not to live a life of sheker, of falsehood? So the suggestion Rabbi Fran makes, a suggestion I'd like to really work on it. And I'll be honest with you, my friends, there are certain shiurs I enjoy more than others. Preparing. This one was a little bit scary because it's something that we all need to improve on. And when you see the severity and how easy it is to slip up on falsehood, it's like a real wake-up call to improve ourselves. 27. How do we become conditioned to facing the truth? How do we avoid the nasty surprise of discovering we have been living a lie, of discovering we have wasted our lives away by deluding ourselves? It all begins with our attitude to speaking the truth. If we are scrupulous in the words we speak, making sure we speak only the truth, then we're better able to recognize truth when it stares us in the face. And he brings here a great example. And if we can walk away with this story in the back of our minds, I think we've been successful today. He notes on the next page in source 28, you know, when the Chafetz Chaim got smicha, late in life, he applied for a passport to travel from Poland to Israel. The passport application asked for the application's profession, and the natural answer for the Chafetz Chaim was rabbi. There was only one problem. Although he had already written the Mishnah Berurah and was acknowledged as the leading halachic authority for all of the Jewish people, he had never received ordination, never received smicha. If there was any person in the world who was entitled to call himself rabbi, it was the Chafetz Chaim. Yet he refused to do so. It was not true. Officially, he was not a rabbi. He sent a telegram to Rav Chaim Elzer Grudzinski in Vilna, who was the Gadol Dor at that time, asking him for smicha based on his worth. Rav Chaim Elzer immediately telegraphed him a smicha, and then Chafetz Chaim was able to apply for a passport. My friends, if we were in a similar situation, right, we were the unquestionable halachic authority of that time, and we had just, you know, authored the Mishnah Berurah, and they asked us technically, are they ever going to ask us for the smicha paper? No. What is our job? We would rationalize without blinking an eye. Rabbi! But that's why the Chafetz Chaim was the Gadol HaDor. Because if technically he never received ordination, so then he's not a rabbi. And you don't rationalize and you don't farfetch and you... It's not true. Period. There's a level of truth. There's a level of falsehood. My friend notes at the end of this piece in 29, because speaking falsehood is an enormous transgression, Rabbeinu Yonah explains in Shari Tshuva, we are obligated to uphold the truth. It is one of the fundamental elements of the soul. What are the building blocks of the soul? Of what materials the soul constructed? Rabbeinu Yonah tells us the answer, truth. The soul is made of truth. All souls are taken from beneath the Kisei HaKavod, the divine throne of glory, from Hashem himself, so to speak. And we know Chol Tamo Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu is MS, the seal of Hashem, is truth. Therefore, lying, cheating, deceiving are all antithetical to the soul. They are destructive. The Sefer Midos of Adat Hashem of Chaim Friedlander and Chelek Aleph has a beautiful couple of pieces on MS. And at the beginning of the first piece, he notes in source number 30, when it speaks about in our parasha, Midvar Sheker Tircha, from you should distance yourself from falsehood, the Sforno writes, Mikol Davar Shuchal Usavev Sheker, distance yourself from anything that may lead to falsehood, which means that there should be nothing that has even a taste of falsehood attached to it. And he notes here, that this language of tirchak is very unusual in the Chumash. By most aveiros or mitzvos, it doesn't say distance yourself. But by lying, it uses midvar sheker tirchak. Distance yourself from falsehood. And he continues, Rav Chaim Friedlander Zatzal, to note that falsehood is not just in speech, it's not just hearing falsehood, it's also in seeing as well. He says, how many times, and we know this to be true, two people can witness the exact same sight, and you ask them, please report it back. They're telling two different stories as if they weren't in the same place at the same time. Why? Because obviously we see things according to the way we look at the world. But do we ever ask ourselves, let me try to understand the truth? Let me try to get at what really happened? How many people's lives, lashon hara, are on the line because we see certain things and we never investigate and we're positive what we've seen? Midrash Sheker Tircha. We have to be so careful. We have to investigate every aspect. Otherwise, it too is a lie. And he speaks about, there are people, and these are not malicious people, who see things, who say things. 32. They're not careful about the way they report things over. For them, it's enough to speak a chatzi emet, a half a truth. But listen to what he says. The truth is that half a truth is falsehood. The whole truth is the name of the shir, because that's the essence. You know, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? You ever ask yourself, well, is that the same thing in three ways? No, because people tell half-truths, and a half-truth a lie. The whole truth, that's where it's at. And here, Pincus notes a Gevaldic insight in Source 33. He gives the example, he says, let's say a person's name is Beryl. Person's name is Shmerel, and he decides that his name is Beryl. So you say to yourself, Beryl, Shmerel, Shmerel, Beryl, who really cares? You know, it all sounds the same. What difference does he make if he starts calling himself Beryl instead of Shmerel? Who really cares? Listen to what Rav Pincus says. The end of 33. Lamito Sheldovar, Mabadze, Mutami Sodo. This is a mistake fundamentally. Gam im la'afachar be'olam lo achpat mahu shmi, even if no one in the world cares whether my name is Beryl or Shmerel. Kishel tseiti mipi davar shu sheker, when I have said falsehood. Pashur harastit ha'olam, I've destroyed the world. Etzem mitzius shel sheker, the whole essence of falsehood. He neged kol mitzius ha'olam, is against the whole fabric of the world. And that's what we have to understand. Establish sheker, just to lie, even in jest, it's a davar chamur ma'od, is very, very serious. And Rav Chaim Friedlander quotes in 34 that the students of Kelm, one of the things they worked on was truth and how to be very exact about truth. Even though Rav Chaim Friedlander, in the parentheses, tries to defend those who do say this, in Kelm, if someone asks you what time it is, the response wasn't be'erech, it's about, you know, 5:45 now, whatever time it is by your neck of the woods. No, it's not about. It's exactly 5:42, whatever time it is, you say the time. Okay, so again, Rav Chaim Friedlander says when people ask you time, they don't want necessarily exact time. They want to know roughly what time it is. But if you're living a life of MS, so you say the exact time. You know, it's interesting. Preparing this last week, obviously whatever you're preparing is you know, forefront on your mind. So my girls got Hanukkah gelt. I know we're close to Purim. You know, at least it's not next Hanukkah that I finally turned into for them to buy them watches. That's what they wanted. They wanted watches. So when I bought them the watches, I said to them, you have to be very careful. So when somebody asks you what time it is, you say, on my watch, the time is. Because who knows if that's really the emistic time? No one knows the exact time, you know, what it is. But on my watch, the time is. So at least the emis, according to my watch, is. It may not be the emis. How careful we have to be. Okay. So others say it's a neurotic mother that's telling the kids how to tell time. Can you imagine going with somebody and says, on my watch, the time is. Who other watch am I talking about? No. Okay. It's a hakpada. It's a sensitivity that we have to be careful for the truth. Let's take a look at some of the examples. Love your neighbor, Rav Fliskin, 36, about truth and falsehood. And obviously he said that these are areas of halacha where one needs to not paskin from a book, but ask halachic authority. Source 1, the severest form of lying is when a person lies to cheat someone financially. 2, a storekeeper is forbidden to tell a customer that an item originally cost him more than it actually did. He may say only, this is my price, I won't sell this item for less, without telling any lies. Some people conjure up stories that contain no truth whatsoever and relate them as if they were true in order to be sociable. Even if these stories do not cause anyone a loss, they constitute a grave offense. You're forbidden to promise in 5 to do someone a favor, to pledge a present when you have no intention of fulfilling your promise. 7, you're forbidden to tell someone that you have done him a favor or spoken well of him when you have not done so. These are examples. And he quotes here another story of Aaron Cutler, who if he would have a letter written up with the amount of students in the yeshiva. He would go into the Beis Medrash and count the students. If one or two students had left from the time the letter was written to the time he counted, he would make them rewrite the letter. So someone might come over to him and say, you know, they would argue, a discrepancy of one or two students is insignificant. And Rav Cutler would reply, it is forbidden. The number must be accurate. Even if the number is inaccurate by only one figure, it's a lie. My friends, do we have that understanding? I'm close. One student, two students, you know, it's close enough. No. A half a truth is a lie. Period. Midrash Sheker Tircha. Robinson Feldbrand, in that sefer we've mentioned before, Midos, speaks about Tiferet, the attribute of truth, one of the Midos that we try to personify. She says in 39 that false gestures and motions are forbidden. All movements must be rooted in truth. So even the way we act, even the way we interact has to be in truth. And she says here in her inspiration section, 41, truth is a stepping stone to character development. It allows us to overcome personal prejudices, raise us above subjectivity, and bring us closer to Hashem, the ultimate truth. The asterisk, I think this is another great refrigerator magnet. Man is a drop of intellect drowning in a sea of instinct, Rav Yisrael Salanter. At the root of all human difficulty is doubt. The closer men are to the truth, the more love is between them, Rav Pinchas of Karts. And she gives us practical advice to avoid lying. 42. Train your tongue to say, I don't know. I'm not sure. I have a reason for not discussing this matter. Don't lie. Be careful when you repeat a story. And we all have this problem. We don't remember the details of the story, so say that. I don't know the details. Don't make up the story as if you really know what happened. Think deeply into everything. Try hard to distance yourself from self-interest. Do not attempt to get at the truth when your honor or self-interest is involved. If you promise something, don't make an exact commitment. It is best not to lie in your thoughts. If you mentally commit yourself to something, do it immediately. And how to ensure that others do not lie? So she gives the following two pieces of advice. Don't ask to borrow something precious. Don't ask for details about sensitive issues. And if you think about it, this is very wise words of wisdom. Because when we ask someone about a sensitive issue, they're going to lie. And if we ask someone to borrow something precious, they're going to make up a story. I don't have it right now. My cousin has it. When it comes back to me, then I'll think about it. You're putting people in a very difficult situation. And that's what we have to understand, is that we are not allowed to A, lie, and B, put people in situations that are going to set them up automatically for lying. Now, many of you are probably thinking, but there are cases where we are allowed to lie. That is true. And that is in 46, although it is usually forbidden to lie, notary Pliskin, at times it's permissible to tell an untruth. The following are some examples, and this is often quoted. It is permitted to tell an untruth to make peace between two people or having a dispute, or to save someone from harm. For example, you may tell someone that person with whom he has quarreled now regrets his behavior, even if it's not true. However, you're permitted to tell an untruth to promote peace only, and this only is so often forgotten, in situations when you have no other option. Moreover, your word should be as close to truth as possible. And that's how Rabbi Yehuda Chassid in Sefer Chassidim, Ishmaehu notes in 43, explains Midvar Sheker Tircha, Gam Midvar Sheker Shuhutar Laomro. Even a word of sheker that you're allowed to say, tirachak, distance it for yourself so it don't look like sheker. You know, we're sometimes a little bit too lax in this area. You know, here we immediately say, oh, I'm lying, but it's to bring darkest shalom. It's to bring peace. Are you sure it's to bring peace? Have you tried other avenues? And even if it is to bring peace, are you saying it in a way which is going to lessen the lie as much as possible? The Zayin Torah mentions here that you should speak in a way that can be understood on two levels. Because sheker and getting into the habit of falsehood is so, so terrible. Rabbi Pliskin does mention in the 47 in the circle, it is not considered lying when a person makes a statement that everyone understands to be an exaggeration. For example, I've told you 1,000 times. So there is some leeway in that respect, that people know you're not lying, it's just an exaggeration. But again, it's a question of training ourselves as much as possible to be conscious of when we speak, are the things coming out of our mouth as truthful as possible? Final idea I'd like to very briefly touch on is chinuch, is children. Moving back to 25 to Rabbi Frant, one thing that most parents have in common is an obsession with bringing up good children. They read books, attend lectures, take courses, anything just to be a better parent. There's no magic formula to raise good children. But if anything comes close, it's honesty. Children who perceive their parents as honest, straightforward, and sincere will be honest children, and honest children are good children. You cannot fool your children. If you are dishonest, they will know it and be dishonest themselves. But if you're honest, they too will be honest. It's interesting, the Lekach V'Alibuv note that one who sends their children to school with money that is made in a dishonest way, there will be an effect on the chinuch of one's children. One has to recognize that dishonesty is something, A, felt by the children on an overt level, on a covert level. It has an influence in the entire chinuch habanim of one's children. Continuing back on the final page, source number 48, it's very important to teach your children not to lie. The sages have said that a person should never tell a child that he'll give him something and not intend to keep his word, for this will teach a child to be dishonest. If you promise something to a child, keep your word. In this way, your honesty will serve as an example for him to follow. If children appreciate the severity of lying, it will become their nature to speak only the truth. And this is something we have to be very careful about. Sometimes we're very flippant. You know, if you help me clean up, then I'll give you X amount of money, or I'll take you shopping, or... And the kid helps you clean up or do whatever thing it is, and you forget about it. Wrong. If this is what you've promised to a child, and that's why all these charts, which are very good, but you gotta follow through. You know, if you get 15 stickers, then, well, the kid works hard on the 15 stickers, and then what? This happens, I find, so often, sometimes with children's teachers. You know, they get so busy in all these mitzvahim and all these projects, they forget even what prize they promised the kids, and here the kids are waiting for a prize, and then are disappointed. It's very bad chinuch. 49, Rav Pan points out that being overtly strict and overbearing with our children can cause them to lie. If they know they have terrible consequences, if they're caught in a misdeed, they'll be inclined to deny everything, and who could blame them? If you place undue emphasis on grades, they'll be inclined to cheat on their exams. But having an honest child is far more important than having a child with good grades. If your child admits having done something wrong and you punish him, you're in effect punishing him for his honesty. This is the worst message you can send. If a child is honest, you have to be able to admit and appreciate and acknowledge this honesty and how difficult it was for the child to admit what they have done wrong. So let's try to summarize what we've seen today. When we look at Parsha Mishpatim and we look at the inyanim of dayanim of judges, we say it's distant for our lives. Not so. All of these have an effect on each and every one of us. To a certain extent, we're all judges. We're all put in certain positions in life of making these judgmental decisions. So in one case, be able to see both truths in front of us as what the truths are. It's very hard when we hear one thing, those first impressions are hard to be able to retract. Dover emes vovavo, we have to be careful about the truth, even if it's difficult to be able to rewire our thinking or our halacha observance. If we learn something different, we have to be able to emodel la emes, to be able to admit the truth. Second, make sure both sides are equally dressed. Don't be affected by the outer externals. Look at inside the person. Don't be affected by the illusions of the Yetzer Hara. Dress them up the same way. Either bring down the illusions or dress up the Torah world, the beauty of the Torah existence, and be able to have a fair choice in front of us. Both are predicated on the concept of emes, of truth. Truth, the Chotamo Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu's emes, it is the seal of what the world is about. Bereishis Bara Elokim, the three N letters, it spells out emet. That is the essence of what the world is about, the concept of truth. when we're dealing with the world around us, they look for the Jews for the aspect of truth, because that's what we're here in this world for, the Yesh Ma'ayin, to be able to see through the illusions of this world of what really is important. And if we fall into that trap, then we've entered into that partnership with falsehood and destruction, and there is no goods to then divvy up at the end. How do we live a life of MS? Being careful about MS. If I'm not a rabbi, I'm not a rabbi. If it's not the right time, it's not the right time. That we have to be people of total, absolute truth. There's a beautiful maisa of the Chazon Ish. We used to have a minyan of Mincha Gedola. And one time, it was close to 1 o'clock before the 10th person came, and his brother-in-law said to him, I told somebody I would meet them at my house at 1 o'clock. Should I stay here for the minyan? Or should I meet the person? And the Chazon Ish says, it's not even a question. If you said somebody 1 o'clock, you're there at 1 o'clock. The people are going to have to find a different minyan. And there was no minyan at that time because he kept his obligation. How many times do we tell somebody, I'll be there at a certain time? How many times at work do we come exactly on time? There is dishonesty here. It's Osem Alechad Hashem Remiah. It's doing God's work with deception, with falsehood. This is a sensitivity that we need to have. That our word is our word, and how careful we have to be with our word, and recognize that although there are times that perhaps we are allowed to lie, ask Halachic Shaila first. Don't be so quick to lie. Midvar Sheker Tircha. This is something we have to distance ourselves from, even if it's only in jest, even if no one's going to be affected by it. The whole essence of speaking a lie is destructive to our soul. And in teaching children, this is a fundamental aspect. Keep our word. Let them see our honesty and our dealing and our relationship to others. They see through everything. That's how they're going to become honest people. That you're very careful that only truth should be spoken in the house. There's a beautiful insight I'd like to close with from the Sefer Mizkenim et Bonan, where he says, in the name of Reb Zusha, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, Peirush, source 50, Kishata Omer Dibur Shel Sheker, when you say words of falsehood, what you're really doing is distancing yourself from Hashem. And if we just keep this in mind every time that we're about to speak something that perhaps is untruth, and we can almost imagine that distance of our soul from the core essence of Hashem, of truth, midvar sheker tircha, that should be enough of an impetus to say, no, this is not who I want to be. This is not who I want to define myself as. And I will then reconnect with the MS, with the truth, with the essence of who and what I am.